Welcome back to My Seminary Life. I'm your host, Brandon Knight, and today, instead of doing a rabbit trail or an experiential preaching or playing the audio from a previous sermon, I'm actually just want to spend time talking about the passage here with you all. No ups, no extras. Don't have to pay for shipping and handling, nothing like that at all. I just want to talk about the passage itself because honestly, this really hit home for me in a way that was different than how a lot of other sermons do. And this passage connects back to an important series that we did here on My Seminary Life. Spiritual formation, yes. Seminary peaked. The seminary era of My Seminary Life peaked after the very first series, talking about spiritual growth, sanctification, how everyone is going through the process of being shaped, spiritually speaking. And this passage in question touches on that subject in a way that was challenging to me, in a way that got me thinking, which is one of the ways that I decide to what I am going to preach on. And it's a very important series. It's something that, you know, we'll see how the rest of this year goes, but it may be something that I circle back to. You know, a couple months ago, I rebroadcast the review of Larry Crabb's The Pressure's Off, and that was also a part of, like, this internal, like, you know what? I think we need to, like, circle back to this, because spiritual formation, existentialism, mysticism, like, these things all kind of, like, overlap. What is that? What's that circle thing called? A Venn diagram? Is that what those are called? Like, to me, they all kind of circle, and just something about it just really, I don't know, connects for me. But enough rambling to get this started. Let's talk about the passage itself. Colossians 2, verses 6 and 7. I have no idea how many times that I have read this passage. And that's not a brag. That's just a statement of a fact. I have no idea how many times I have read these two verses. And for some reason, I have always missed this one little sentence, this one little part of one little sentence. And you know, some people talk about how, you know, the Bible is so spiritually rich and deep that, you know, and it's so layered that, you know, we're not going to be able to fully understand everything. And you know what? There are certain passages of Scripture that definitely do that. You know, you look at, like, prophetic sections of Scripture. There's still, you know, you look at Old Testament prophecies, you know, that we as Christians don't quite know what to do with sometimes. Even in Judaism, they still don't quite know what to do with some of those prophecies as well. So yeah, like, there are passages of Scripture that we're not going to fully understand, or maybe they're multi-layered, and then you have to add in the cultural context and the whole bit. That's not true of every passage. I mean, cultural context, obviously, but is an important part. But, you know, I do think certain passages of Scripture are a little bit more at face value than others, not to the extent of if the plain sense makes good sense, seek no other sense kind of understanding, but just still maybe not as, like, complex as we make it. And as spiritual as it sounds to say that the Bible is so deep and rich that we're not going to be able to fully understand it, is as good and spiritual as that sounds, I think it's also worth pointing out that we're humans and we're not going to retain all the information that we read in one sitting all the time, you know, especially when you have a book, as I just said, that, you know, has prophetic sections, and it was a completely different cultural context and a completely different language with different literary devices than what we use now. So, like, as good and spiritual as it sounds to say, oh, you know, the Bible is so deep and rich and spiritual, you're also a human and you're just going to forget some things sometimes. But Colossians 2, 6, and 7, two little verses. And verse 6 starts out by talking about how now that we have believed in Jesus, or more accurately, Paul saying to the church in Colossae, now that you have believed in Jesus, it is important that you still continue to believe in Jesus. Continue to choose to follow Jesus. And that may seem like the most obvious thing to tell a Christian, to follow Jesus. But again, cultural context makes a big difference here. In the Roman Empire, the emperor was seen as and treated as and revered as a god. Paul is typically writing to Gentiles, and Gentiles come from more polytheistic backgrounds. So to say something like, hey, now that you're believing in Jesus, you need to choose to continue to follow Jesus and not a whole bunch of other gods. And with that, Jesus also says that we need to pick up our cross and follow him and all of this. Like, it is Paul and Jesus going together here. There is a singularity of who is our rabbi that we are following, who is our God. He is Jesus. So now that we have put our faith in Jesus, we need to continue to choose to follow him. Verse 7 then opens with two familiar illustrations that Paul uses as metaphors for surrendering our lives to him. One is to put our roots deep down into Jesus, and the other is to build on top of Jesus. These are two that come up in other teachings and other writings in the New Testament, and can even be traced back to different portions of the Old Testament as well. When I think of, you know, putting your roots down deep, my mind goes to two places. Of course, there's John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches, you know, this connection of singularity between us and Jesus as his disciples. But it also reminds me of Psalm 1, where it talks about how the person who meditates on the law of the Lord, which there was did an episode on this earlier this year, when you have when somebody who meditates on the law of the Lord is compared to there as a tree planted by rivers of living water. Like, this is like, it's an agricultural society. Like, these kinds of metaphors are going to come up. But again, it kind of shows like the deepness of that relation, the depth of that relationship with Jesus, of putting your roots down deep into him. I don't know how much gardening you have done in your life, but we bought this home a little over a year ago now, and there was some interesting landscaping choices made by the previous homeowner. And so I have spent every nice day, just about every nice day, out in the yard somewhere working, trying to like shape this yard into our vision for what it's going to look like. And so that has come with a lot of weeding, a lot of uprooting, interesting choices of plants in interesting locations. And something that you will find out, especially for tree roots, is that you just sometimes you get lucky and you can pull like a weed out and it's boop, there's the whole thing. And then other times it's like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to tear up like this whole, you know, 3-foot radius around this one thing because the roots just keep going. We are to put our roots deep down into Jesus, not a shallow faith. We're going to follow him casually, but instead a deep, intimate one. And then again, the other metaphor here that Paul uses is to build your life on top of him. Jesus, the chief cornerstone, the cornerstone that the builders rejected. Jesus, who taught at the end of the Sermon on the Mount that the person who hears his words and does them is like a person who builds their house on a rock, and the rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up, and the house on the rock stood firm. As opposed to the foolish man, who built his house upon the sand. The foolish man built his house upon the sand. The foolish man built his house upon the sand, and the rains came tumbling down. The rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up, and the house on the sand went splat. Anyway, so thank you. I'm sure you're clapping right now. I know you are. So thank you for that round of applause. But Jesus is saying here in the Sermon on the Mount, which with this story, this parable that he tells, it's often taken as like a evangelistic method of like build your life on Jesus versus the other things, where in context he's talking about hearing and doing his word, this message that he just got done proclaiming, that building your life on that makes you like the wise man who built his house upon the rock. So again, these are all kinds of like metaphors. My son just ran by with my tennis shoes for some reason. These are all kinds of like metaphors that are going to connect to the original audience and also still in a way connect to us as well, because we understand the idea of building on a strong foundation, building on a sturdy foundation, how deep roots can sometimes go depending on the kind of plants that you are working with. And it's that kind of strong, intimate depth, deep relationship that we are supposed to have in choosing to continue to follow and believe in Jesus. Then Paul gets to the results of that in the second half of verse 7. So when we choose to follow Jesus and continue to choose to follow Jesus in a deep, strong way, Paul writes here that there are two results of that. And this is not the only two results of that. This is two results that are directly relevant to his original audience. There are more things that come from this, obviously. But again, we're getting to the punchline. It's just the thing is that the punchline is literally the last little thing that Paul mentions here. So the first thing that happens when we follow Jesus this way and choose to continue to follow Jesus in this way is that then your faith will grow strong in the truth you were taught. Your faith will grow strong in the truth you were taught. Hold on a second. I thought my faith increased because I knew a lot of truth. I thought my faith increased because I studied truth and I read good theology and I listen to good sermons and I, you know, I read good books and I, look, those things are helpful. But what Paul is showing here is that your faith increases in the truth you were taught first and foremost because you have an intimate relationship with Jesus, not a bunch of books about the guy. Not about a bunch of guys talking about Jesus, but because you have a one-on-one deep relationship with him. Then your faith will increase in the truth that you know. Not because you did a bunch of studying first and then your faith was increased, but because you are choosing an intimate relationship with him first and foremost. Not just knowledge, but experience. An experience with Jesus. So when we choose to continue to follow him in a deep way, our faith will increase and, get this, you will overflow with thankfulness. And that was the part that made me go, well, I guess now I'm going to write an entire sermon on this, on these two verses, and then also talk about it on my podcast. Because since when, I mean, the answer is always, but since when has thankfulness ever been promoted as a true mark of a believer? Whenever we talk about, oh, you know, you will know a person is following Jesus by their fruit. And there's a lot of answers that are given to that because of their love, their peace, their anger. That's a bad one. But still, their anger and over things that Jesus would actually stand against, those kinds of things, their kindness, you know, their love, their, you know, there's all these different things that we usually bring up as answers of how do you know that somebody is following Jesus? When was the last time that you heard someone say that a mark of following Jesus is an overflow of thankfulness. You are somebody who is just very clearly thankful. I don't ever hear about that. When I preached this passage originally, I talked about how you don't ever hear about people who are known for their thankfulness. I've never heard of somebody known for their anger, their love, their, you know, the other things, sure. They're known because they stand on the street corner and protest abortion and try to use it as a way to spread the gospel. Sure. They go door to door and bother people at dinner time to spread the gospel. Sure. They, you know, these other things, sure. You know, all those other things, sure. You hear about these things as examples of how somebody follows Jesus and there's evidence of their fruit in their life. Or even, you know, speaking of fruit, how about the fruit of the Spirit? All those other, like, those are good examples of people who are, or those are good examples of what it looks like to follow Jesus. But you don't hear about thankfulness. And actually, I did have somebody after the message come up to me and say, hey, can I tell you about this person who used to go to church here, who is someone that I would say was a follower of Jesus who is known for their thankfulness. And I was told this story about this older woman who used to attend the church that I was preaching at. And this woman, you know, whenever you asked her, how you doing? Her response was always, first and foremost, I am thankful because, and then they would tell you the reason why that moment they are thankful, and then the conversation would go about how conversations normally go, right? So, but this was somebody who was identified as someone who is known for following Jesus by their thankfulness. At one point in history, and this one isn't my fault, but at some point in history, we got this crazy idea that cleanliness is next to godliness. I don't know where that one came from or how people try to use the Bible to support it, but that's a thing that people have said. Maybe they still do. But what we see here in Colossians 2 is that an overflow of thankfulness is evidence of godliness. That part of your spiritual journey, part of your sanctification, part of becoming like Jesus, all of the above of those things I just said, should be that you are a person who is known for being thankful. And here's the thing. Thankfulness is one of those things that, like, technically, it's nowhere near revolutionary to tell people to be thankful. Literally something we start teaching children as soon as they can start talking. As a child of the mid-90s, I can say for a fact, and some of you will know this as well, that Barney always taught us that please and thank you are the magic words. That's how it works around here, right? So, like, to say that thankfulness is, you know, something you should be saying and expressing to people isn't necessarily a hot take whatsoever. Though, since empathy has become such a boogeyman word within conservative evangelicalism, who knows, maybe one day thankfulness will be a sin as well. You never know. If empathy can be a sin, I'm sure just about anything else can be a sin at this point. So maybe just as a preemptive, let's get ahead of this a little bit. You should be a thankful person. And if you have a hard time saying thank you, you have a lot of work to do, okay? There's a lot that you need to be working on in your life. And as followers of Jesus who are seeking a deep relationship with him, an evidence of that depth is going to be being a person who is thankful. Don't ever lose that, because it is such a mundane thing, and I mean that in a good way. It's such a normal thing to talk about how important it is to be thankful and to tell people thank you and all that. But honest to God here, what Paul is showing, that one of the many ways that people are known for choosing to continue to follow Jesus, not in a shallow way, but in a very deep, intimate, experiential way, is that they are known for an overflow of thankfulness. And that, I think, is worth spending 20 minutes on a podcast to let you all know, don't ever stop being thankful. Don't ever stop saying thank you to people. Be someone who is known for their thankfulness. It sounds so Sunday school cliche, and yet somehow not, because I never got a Sunday school lesson on thankfulness. At least not like this. Maybe once a year at Thanksgiving, but like we didn't get like it is evidence of your spiritual growth that you are a thankful person. No, it's just good manners, you know? But no, it's actually like evidence of your spiritual growth that you can be thankful and express that thankfulness. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Let me say that again. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend. And if you haven't yet already, please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the other great shows here on the Anazal Ministries Podcast Network, like The Whole Church Podcast, The Homily, and my sister show, Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Next month is May. Excuse me. It's gonna be May. And there's gonna be something interesting is coming your way in the month of May here on My Seminary Life. What was originally intended to be just like a one and done episode, honestly, not even one and done, something I never even considered talking about here on the show before, has basically evolved into its own little mini-series. So come back next week ready for more My Seminary Life fun. But once again, thank you for listening to today's episode. This has been My Seminary Life, and thanks again for listening. Having two podcasts really screws up how you close these episodes. Remind you, as always, that theology is for everyone, so keep on studying.